I'm Lillian Vasquez with Lifestyles on KVCR. Thanks for listening. On today's show, we'll continue our recognition in regards to Hispanic Heritage Month. Therefore, my guest today is local author Annette Chavez Macias, who will share details about her newest book, Big Chicas, Don't Cry. The book takes place in Southern California and is loosely based on the Inland Empire region, where Annette grew up. Annette shares how she followed her childhood dream of becoming an author and how she shifted from romance novelist to writing a book about four cousins who navigate the meaning of family over the course of 1 year. She talks about being Mexican-American and how growing up in a big family inspired the events in the book. Together, we'll discuss each of the main characters, the four female cousins, and we exchange stories about the cultural tradition of tamales on Christmas Eve. Here's my conversation with local author Annette Chavez Macias. Welcome and thank you for joining us.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
So you've written romance novels under a pen name, Sabrina Soul. Why a pen name and why for other books and not for this book?
So when I first started out wanting to get published, I had always been a big romance reader, and I had a friend who was a published romance author, and I had reached out to her to kind of, you know, give me some tips on how to get started. And because she was a romance author, she invited me to come to a local romance authors writing group chapter. And with my first meeting, I just fell in love with that chapter just because I just saw all these women, you know, writing romance, and it was just so inspirational. And she also had encouraged me to try to get a story published with her publisher, and I got accepted. And so that's how I got into writing romance. And when I was first beginning, my friend still uses a pen name, and it just seemed like that was something that most authors did. And I just thought, you know, it would be kind of fun to create this new persona, this romance author with a different name, and just kind of also keep that part of my life private. So it just seemed a natural fit to go with a pen name.
You went with a pen name for the romances, but this book is kind of a rom-com chick flick kind of story, I think, with a Latino spin maybe, but you chose not to use the pen name with this one.
Yes. So if you were to categorize my book, according to publishers, it would be considered women's fiction.
Oh.
And the romance genre is very specific, that at the end of the book, there has to be a happily ever after. And I knew that's what readers would expect from a Sabrina Soul, which was my romance pen name, book.
Oh.
And because with Big Chicas Don't Cry, not every character gets a happily ever after, I didn't want to disappoint readers who would follow me over romance. So I wanted to be very purposeful about separating the two.
Well, that makes sense. I understand it now. And it does have a good ending. And I don't want to give it away, but it does have a good ending. I think it was apropos. How much of this book is found in your life?
Well, I think it definitely was inspired by my life growing up in a big Mexican-American family, because the book follows four cousins who are very close, almost like sisters. And I definitely have those relationships with my cousins. And being Mexican-American, you know, I couldn't not let it influence my writing, even in my romance. All my heroines are Latina. And so this book, I definitely went more into my personal experiences. The book is fictional, you know, so none of the cousins in the book are actually my, you know, based off of, you know, a real life cousin. But the whole general just, I guess, feel of being in this big Mexican-American family and just kind of the different drama that happens sometimes between family members. Well, there's drama, but at the end of the day, you're still going to come together to help each other through hard times.
Okay. Now, your book takes place in Southern California, specifically Inland Valley. Why Inland Valley instead of the Inland Empire? Just curious on that one.
So I wanted to set it in a fictional town. So I grew up in the Inland Empire, Inland Valley. I grew up in Ontario, and now I live in Rancho Cucamonga. And all of my immediate family on my mom's side all live in this region as well. So that's probably why I decided to base the book in the area. But I didn't want to, you know, do a specific city. So I just decided to make this fictional town and just base it off of the region overall. So that's why I called it Inland Valley.
Yeah, because you do make reference, I think, in there one time to Riverside. So you do name some cities that, you know, which tells it it's here in Southern California, which to me as a reader from the Inland Empire really recognize a lot of the things, right? But if people are reading it from other parts of the country or world might not know that. So, all right. Well, let's talk about your characters. There's Erica, Grace, Selena, and Mari. And so when I started reading the book, I didn't get it right away that each one were telling their own story. It's their narrative of their world, right? And so I'm a little slow on the update. Didn't get that till about the fourth chapter, and then went, oh, okay. Because I kept trying to find out who the narrator was, who was talking. And then, you know, when I saw how you were labeling the chapters, then I'm like, okay, I put two and two together at that point. Why did you decide to go that route rather than a narrator telling the whole story?
I think when you're doing first person in a book, it's a deeper point of view, and you really get inside that character's head rather than having a third person narrator. So I really was purposeful in that I wanted each cousin to tell her own story. And I tried very hard to also make sure each cousin had her own voice. So, you know, in the book, Erica is the one who likes to use Spanish curse words and English curse words because she's just more emotional that way. Whereas Gracie
definitely doesn't.
Her character is more faithful. So she's always talking to God. And I just really wanted their voice to be part of the characterization and use that as a tool to bring out their personalities as well.
Yeah. So let's just stop with Erica and Gracie. Let's just deal with them for right now. Erica has more of a feisty attitude. She's more of a little more of a tomboy, not really, but she's into sports. She likes her beer. She's just a little more feisty, right? Mm-hmm. And then Gracie is the teacher. She's more religious, Catholic, teaches in a Catholic school. And I like when she writes her notes or writes her thoughts to God. She goes, oh God, please let me get through this, blah, 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 blah. Oh God, please don't let me make a fool of myself, blah, 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 blah. Whereas the other girls will tell their cousins or their friends. She talks to God, although she's close with the other cousins as well. All right, tell me a little bit about Selena.
So Selena is the cousin who kind of struggles with her being a Latina because she does not speak Spanish and she doesn't like the Mexican food or doesn't really connect to her culture as much as the other cousins. And she's also in a career and has had relationships where being a Latina she's been having to be judged on that. And so I think it's harder for her throughout the book to kind of see where she belongs. Does she belong with her family? Does she belong somewhere else? But because she is not a Spanish speaker with her voice, obviously she does not speak any of Spanish in the book. And her language is more, you know, Southern California girl.
Right. And she, as a Latina, is who I kind of related to because I'm Mexican American. I don't speak any Spanish, except for a few bad words and a few things that my parents used when they were arguing or something, but not much. And so sometimes I was called a coconut in school, in middle school and high school, because I was, well, you know what coconut is. Mm-hmm. And most of my friends were white, not Latinas. And so it was kind of an odd place for me finding my way. And even now, as I do this, I know many people expect me to speak Spanish. And my father grew up in Colton, didn't want me speaking Spanish because he didn't want me to feel the same bigotry that he felt as a little boy. He wanted me to to speak English than my brother. And now looking back, I know he's blamed himself, and I wish we would have learned Spanish because it would have opened different doors, and it would have been, you know, I would have understood some of my grandparents or my aunts and uncles better. Although one side spoke perfect English, the other side was little of both. So she's who I related to. I didn't mean to go on the tangent about me, but that's kind of who I am. All right, let's talk about Mari.
Sure. So Mari is the estranged cousin, and she also is the cousin who, of the four, doesn't really have her own career. She doesn't have her own career,
right?
But she's married to a wealthy lawyer, and her life, when we go into the majority of the book, her life is where she's questioning if this is really what she's wanted. You know, she grew up with not a lot of money, a lot of issues with that, and she thought that if she just had money, that all her problems would be solved. And now she's discovering that's not the case.
Right, right.
So her voice is, she does speak some Spanish because she's married to a Latino. So she does speak Spanish. So she's held on to her culture that way, but she is not connected to her family as much as she was when she was younger. And so her journey is trying to discover herself and how she fits into the family now.
Right, okay. So I think you defined them all. You know your characters well, for sure. Of these four ladies, do you have a favorite?
You know, it's hard to say, because I think, you know, there's a little bit of me in all of them.
Mm-hmm.
In different ways, I identify with all of them. If I had to pick, not that she was my favorite, but when I was writing, Erica really came through as the dominant character, mm-hmm. as the cousin. And I don't know if it's because, like you said, she's more feisty. So her personality is very strong. But definitely there's a piece of me in all four. So they're all my favorites.
So I thought Selena's character was strong as well. I thought I thought Grace and Mari were maybe a little docile more so. But Selena's character and the fact that she goes on to change her career and do the different things, I thought she had some gumption in her as well,
yeah.
You know, for sure. But my favorite was probably Mari. And strangely enough, because I was hoping she'd come to a better place and find her way. And I think also the fact that she's a baker and can, I think that's kind of the Mexican culture too. She's a cook. She can put this food together that smell good, make a room feel wonderful. People mm-hmm. love her food. And I think she just got lost along the way. But, you know, I don't want to spoil the ending, but I thought it was going to go one way with her romance and it didn't. So I like how you brought that back to that, because I didn't see it going that way. So that was good. One of the things you do, you weave in some traditions that are what I probably consider same as my home, Mexican-American home tradition. And one of them is tamales and making them on Christmas Eve. We made tamales I only spread the masa. My mom did all the work. I spread the masa. It's not really making tamales when you're doing just spreading the masa. But did you always do it on Christmas Eve? Was that your family tradition? And is that your family tradition?
Yes, it is. That's definitely, it comes from my family. As long as I can remember, the women in the family gathered on the morning of Christmas Eve, you know, 5:30 in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, we each had our own jobs. And I also was a spreader at some point. One time, a couple of years, I was the counter, because we make so many pounds because our family is so big. So I had to keep track of how many tamales were going in this pot and what time did we put them to cook. And so that's definitely my family's tradition. And we still do it to this day. Well, last Christmas, unfortunately, we lost my grandmother. And she was the one who was, even though she was 95, she was the one, you know, telling us what to do.
Strong women last a long time, right?
Yes, yes. So.
And she was still the boss at 95.
Yes, she was.
And
yes,
everybody
was.
Knew it.
Yes. So that was hard last Christmas, but I'm just glad that we were able to continue the tradition.
So moving forward, you'll continue the tradition in making tamales and always on Christmas, because we didn't make them on Christmas Eve. It was just too much. We would make them another day and we would make 50 to 70 dozen tamales, right? I don't know, because everybody then in the neighborhood, as soon as they find out you make tamales, they want some and they want some. And then you take them to your kids' school and they want some. And so the list yes. keeps growing. And as my mother got older, I won't be carrying on the tradition because I don't know how to make them. But my mother and aunts made them. And I think one of my cousins could certainly do it. She's excellent in the kitchen. I'm not as good in the kitchen. I'm good at eating. I'm just not as good at taking the food as well. You're listening to Lifestyles on KVCR. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, I'll continue my conversation with author Annette Chavez-Macias. I'm Lillian Vasquez. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Lifestyles. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with local author Annette Chavez-Macias. Her newest book is Big Chicas, Don't Cry. So let's talk about the title of your book, Big Chicas, Don't Cry. Is it a play off Big Girls, Don't Cry? Or why this title?
It is a play off of that. But interestingly enough, it actually was not the original title when I was writing the book. The title was, for me, was going to be Making Tamales. Oh. And there's a part in the book where Erica's mom tells her that as long as you start with a good masa, then it doesn't matter what you put in it. It's going to be a good tamale. And so I just kind of saw that as a metaphor, you know, for life and the foundation that the cousins had because of their family. So originally when I pitched the book for my agent, that was going to be the title. And then when we were going to go out to submit to publishers, we started having conversations about whether or not to keep the title. And, you know, there was a concern that, well, one, not everybody knows what a tamale is,
right?
Or have not eaten them. So so it kind of limits reference. But also, we wanted it to be more, you know, this is what you're going to get in the story. And the story was about the cousins. So, as an author, I'm always thinking of titles, even though I may not have a book to go with it. And so I actually had a list of titles for future books, you know, that I kept. So when we started tossing around different titles, I went to that list and that title was there. And as soon as I saw it, I'm like, yes, this fits. This is going to be the title for this book.
Well, I think it's more catchier than the tamale angle. I would have gotten the tamale angle, but I think you would have narrowed the people that would have really got it, right? So Big Chicas Don't Cry is real similar to Big Girls Don't Cry. And first of all, there's nothing wrong with crying as a big girl, but I like the title. And I think it was more catchy. So whoever advised you probably was there. But it was really still yours because you had it on your list there.
Yes.
All right. So in writing this book, how was it different from you than writing some of your other books? Because I read that you had started this book, and then you wrote all these other books. I wrote this other stuff. Then you kept coming back. So tell me a little bit of that journey.
So I had always wanted, you know, ever since I was little, I wanted to be an author. I was a big reader. And that was always something I thought in the back of my mind, you know, wouldn't it be great if I could have a book published one day? But I never sat down and tried to write a book. I did other type of writing. I was a newspaper reporter for a couple of years. Then I got into public relations, marketing. So I was doing that type of writing. And then right before I was going to turn 40, I just kind of, you know, midlife crisis or whatever, and you're just kind of reevaluating, you know. And I said, you know what, I'm going to try. I want to try to be an author. And I had this scene in my head where I didn't know what the story was going to be when this scene happened, but I just kept thinking about it. I kept thinking about it until one night, middle of the night, I got up, opened my laptop, and I just wrote out the scene just so I could get it out of my head.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And from there, I just kept going back to it and adding to it. And over time, it developed into this story about four cousins But at the same time, you know, I didn't really know what it meant to be an author. I hadn't taken any like craft type of classes. I wasn't in the book publishing community. So when I had reached out to my friend who was the romance author, and so because of that connection, I got, you know, kind of distracted a little bit and decided, okay, yes, I can do this. I can be a romance author. But at the same time, I couldn't get this story. I couldn't put the story away. And, you know, it changed here and there. The names changed. Some of the different plots changed. But the core part of the story about the four cousins and their relationship with each other and with their family was there. And in 2012, I think, maybe a little bit after that, I found out about a contest and I decided I want to enter this book instead of a romance book. I want to try finish this book and get some feedback because I wanted to know, you know, is this something or is this trash? What am I going to do with this book? Because of the contest, that's what inspired me to actually focus and finish the book so I could enter the contest. And I didn't place, I didn't, you know, wasn't a finalist or anything, but I did get a lot of great feedback from the judges. And so that kind of inspired me to, okay, I have something here. I want to try and get it published. And because I had already been in the publishing industry now for a couple of years, I understood that, okay, as a romance author, there were publishers that I did not need an agent to submit to. And I was very fortunate that I was able to get contracts without an agent with these smaller publishers. But I knew this book, I wanted to target the bigger publishers. And because of that, I needed an agent. And so that's kind of, again, what inspired me to just focus on finishing this book and getting it published.
So when you submitted this for this contest and you didn't place, what was the feedback you got from some of the judges?
The most positive feedback was that they could relate to the story. Mm-hmm. They could see themselves in the cousins, and they were not Latina judges. Mm-hmm. For the most part. So to me, that told me that I did have something that could be relatable to a bigger audience, you know, than just my friends.
Right,
or,
right.
You know, my family.
Right.
So some of the feedback that I got was about one of the characters. They didn't like her love interest. They didn't like the way that something's happened with that particular relationship. So I went back and I changed some things. Some of the feedback was about, again, distinguishing the voices because there were four main characters. So they got lost sometimes, like you mentioned, you know, who was talking to who. So I tried to really focus, like I mentioned before, bringing out the character's personality through their voices so it could be more distinguishable. So yes, the feedback definitely helped me work on the story and polish it so it would be ready for me to submit to an agent.
Okay, so being an author is not an easy career. Right? It's kind of probably has hills and valleys and, you know, all kinds of things. How was it for you? You said you always knew you wanted to write, but even getting into the romance novels and leaving your PR job or your reporting job and going this route, what do you say to a young Annette, you know, mm-hmm. that's 18 and maybe has that desire to do that? What do you say to that youngster?
I would say, don't be afraid to go after your dream. I would say, especially surround yourself with people who are going to support that dream. And for me, that was finding the author community. Mm. Not so much for me to get a contract earlier, because I know I could not have finished this book when I was in my 20s.
Oh, right.
You know, I had to experience some things before that. But I do wish I would have found, besides my one author friend, I wish I would have discovered the writing community earlier, just because you just find so much inspiration in seeing all these people go after their dreams. Yeah. So you want to do it too. And then you just learn stuff from them. You learn about craft. You learn about the publishing industry as a whole. So I would definitely tell myself, just go for it sooner. Maybe the book's not going to be ready, you know, for a couple more years, but at least you'll be surrounded by people who are going to cheerlead for you.
Right. So it's not all, it's not always a career that's smooth sailing, right? You no bumps along the road. There's definitely going to be bumps along the road,
yes.
right? But
yes.
stay focused and surround yourself about like-minded people, I guess, that would be your sounding boards and stuff.
Yes. And read a lot. If you want to be a writer, you want to be a published author, you need to read a lot.
Okay. My last question. I'm always curious of the where authors get their titles, and we discussed that, but also their dedication and your dedication in your book. Can you share who it was dedicated to?
Oh, yes. It was dedicated to my grandmother. You're going to make me cry again.
Sorry.
And my great-grandmother.
In Spanish, what do you call them?
So we called my great-grandmother Abuelita. So short for Abuelita, but I put a W in front of it because when we were little, we couldn't say Abuelita. So we just called her Abuelita, and it just kind of stuck. And there is a character in the book named Abuelita. So definitely inspired by her. And then my grandma, I'm the oldest. I'm the oldest grandchild. So I called her Mom. And then when the other grandkids came along, she was Grandma Chayo because her name is Rosario. So Chayo is the nickname for Rosario.
And that's who you dedicated the book to?
Yes.
All right, Annette.
My grandmother and my great-grandmother.
And your great-grandmother. All right, Annette. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for the book. It's a fun read. It's an easy read, which is what I enjoy, an easy read. I don't want to be thinking. I just want to be entertained. I would sit outside in my backyard with sun tea and read your book. And so I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for taking the time to tell our story.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed the talk.
To learn more about Annette Chavez-Macias, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on Today's Show. Hey, if you have a few minutes, go ahead and make your pledge, because Pledge Drive is right around the corner. Why not get your pledge in today? Thanks. That's our show for this week. To hear any of our past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. You can also listen to Lifestyles on your favorite streaming device. Search for Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez and take this show on the go. Lifestyles is on Facebook and Instagram. Follow us at 919 Lifestyles and search for Lifestyles with Lillian on Instagram. Or go to kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on the social media icons at the top of the page. Thanks to all who helped to make this show possible, including Sharina Wadd, David Fleming, Sean Houlihan, Natasha Coles, and executive producer Rick Dulock. Our theme music is provided by Ethan Bortnick. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez. Bye for now. Yeah,